AI is probably not going to take people's jobs, but humans that know how to use AI or that really understand it, at least to some level, well, they might be taking the job of some humans that don't.
Welcome to the Business of AI in Healthcare podcast. Our mission is to discuss practical insights and share knowledge on how to navigate the transformative technology of AI. It is important to understand how AI can be used safely and ethically while revolutionizing patient care, streamlining operations, and enhancing medical research. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Kaiser. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app to ensure you don't miss any of the featured episodes. You can also join us online at thebusinessofaiinhealthcare.com.
Today's Business of AI in Healthcare is going to be quite interesting. I'll tell you why after our introduction. Our guest is from the picturesque country setting in Franklin Township, New Jersey, Dr. Bob Murray, Chief Medical Officer of NextGen Healthcare, who's a clinical informatics expert, practicing physician, and medical practice owner. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you. Good morning.
I know we'll run out of time to bring the full benefit of your background and expertise to this podcast. The reason I mentioned this discussion will be most interesting is the scope of your background. Chief Medical Officer for NextGen Healthcare, a unique primary care practice with your wife, who's a nurse practitioner, and your amazing doctoral chemistry background. I see you have some really strong connections to Texas also with Rice University and UT Southwestern Medical School. I'm based in Dallas, so certainly we have something in common there. But let's start with your role as the Chief Medical Officer at NextGen Healthcare. What is that like?
So yeah, NextGen Healthcare, we make technology and services for doctors' offices, not hospitals, but doctors' offices throughout the country. So it's the software that many of them use to manage their medical records, to do the billing, to offer patient portals and other digital tools to their patients, to communicate with other doctors' offices and healthcare system. And so we do all of that stuff. And as Chief Medical Officer, it's my job to make sure that those tools are safe and effective and really helping the various types of doctors throughout the country that rely on them to do the good work of taking care of people.
Not an easy assignment, I'm sure. Most small practices, and I think that's your area of focus, is not the large institutional healthcare systems, but most small practices, they like their independent, they like their autonomy, they like to be able to do things the way they want to. And for you to bring in resources and technology, that's got to be an educational process, I'm sure. Is that not the case?
It is. Yeah, we love independent practices, actually of all sizes. We do have quite a large, you know, number of bigger practices as well. But that independence is key, right? We want to provide things to them that allow them to work the way that they want to work, not for them to need to, you know, use it only the way that the software or the technology forces them to do something. So we love that independence. We love the entrepreneurship that's in a lot of, you know, medical practices. And we want them to be able to take care of people in the way that they want to. And we try to adjust the software and the technology around that.
So prior to being the chief medical officer, which is a huge responsibility, you were actually the chief medical information officer. Now, is that a unique role that you gravitated towards? How did you get involved? It sounds very technical to me.
It is. So it's a lot of what is called clinical informatics. So it's right. Like the use of technology in healthcare. And so, yeah, I was the chief medical information officer, which is the CMIO of our local community hospital. And so I was responsible for the technology that the hospital used. And then we have a lot of both hospital owned and private practices in the area that use technology. But CMIOs are actually throughout the country, particularly in larger healthcare systems and practices, and their role is to help the doctors and the clinical people use the technology to make the technology adapt to them. It's that intersection of clinical care and technology. That's where the CMIO lives in the organizations that have them.
We have a program at the University of Texas, Dallas, and it's the Alliance for Physician Leadership. That program, we offer a variety of courses for an MS MBA, and one of them is a health information management technology course. And in that, we have a specialty for informatics, okay, a special certificate for informatics. And that's become a most interesting area. I see more and more of the doctors wanting to be aware, and the chief medical information officer, or the informatics person, they always want to stay clinically involved. And what's your thoughts on that? You've kept a very strong clinical involvement. Is that important as you're going down this high-tech information pathway?
Yeah, it really is. And I think to anybody out there that's thinking about, you know, kind of adding some informatics into their clinical career, my advice would be it is very important to maintain that practice for two reasons. The first is that, you know, the practice of medicine changes constantly. What the technology needs to do to help people take care of people changes, and you need to be aware of that and be able to know when that's happening. But the other is that part of your role in informatics is usually to try to change other people's behavior. If you're the CMIO, you're trying to usually change doctors' behavior. They need to respect you, right, as a clinician, as somebody who cares for patients. And so it is important that you walk the walk, you know, so to speak, of still caring for people as you're trying to, you know, help them, you know, learn to use the technology better or get the technology that they need to care.
Keeping the long white coat on is very important, is what I'm hearing. So that is good.
Yeah.
So, you know, change taking place, you're talking about getting people to change. And, you know, we talk a lot about the evolution of moving from fee for service into value-based care, population health being a new way of doing things. On one hand, that sounds really good, using technology, informatics to help leverage that. How did you start to get involved with artificial intelligence, AI? What type of adoption process have you used at NextGen right now to lean into that in a bigger way? Tell us a story there, if you would.
Sure. I mean, we have a number of kind of AI areas that we're looking at, again, at NextGen, you know, as the provider of technology and software for doctors' offices throughout the country. But the one that I'm personally most excited about, and I personally use, is it's called ambient listening. So what happens, you know, I still see patients as a family doctor. I'll go in, I'll say, hey, I'm going to use my phone to help me write my note. Is that okay with you? And every patient that I've ever asked that says yes. And then I'll put the phone down and we'll have a conversation. They're there for whatever, blood pressure, you know, cut on their finger. The phone is just listening to the conversation. Everything is secure and private. And I don't have to type in the computer. I don't have to look at the computer. I can look at the patient, because what happens is after the conversation is done and I leave the room, artificial intelligence will take that conversation and make the start of my note. Sometimes it's my whole note. And so that's ambient listening, incredibly exciting technology with AI, because it saves the doctors, the providers' time. I don't have to write all those notes. You know, I just have to edit them or, you know, add some things to them. And it lets me really be present in the exam room with the patient, because I've got like a kind of an AI note taker, so to speak. So that's super exciting. We're seeing amazing adoption of that in people that use our software, you know, all over the country. And a lot of doctors are just raving about the time savings. Of course, everybody wants it to, like, you know, be super smart and make a perfect note every time. It doesn't do that, at least not yet. But it does definitely save doctors' times, and patients enjoy it as well, because they feel like the doctor's really paying attention to them rather than, you know, turning to their back and, you know, typing in the computer or whatever's, you know, going on before it.
So it really redefines the patient experience. I mean, and the doctor's, you know, he's being augmented, I guess, with a tool that's not invasive, it's not insulting, it's friendly, so to speak. You probably don't even know it's there, right?
Yeah, no, the phone is really just listening, it's transcribing, and then, you know, the artificial intelligence will kick in and help turn that conversation into the note. You know, it's not making decisions. At this point, it's not, you know, suggesting that the doctor do this, that, or the other, or anything like that. It's just a note taker. And in terms of its impact, you know, I think the AI is going to affect many, many, many aspects of our lives. It's going to affect many aspects of healthcare. But this is one of these initial just kind of slam dunks where the technology is good for doctors. It's good for patients. It's good for healthcare systems because it speeds things up. And I think adoption is going to be very, very widespread.
You know, I can see where that's the low-hanging fruit for sure. And the trust factor, you say it's pretty good. Does it take a while for you to build the confidence to say, this is a tool that I want to use all the time? This should be part of my best practice that I use all the time. Or is this something that, yeah, we'll try it out and see how it works? What's the trust factor time frame to build trust in something like that?
Sure. Well, that's going to depend on the person. I mean, I think with me, after I tried it maybe two or three times, I'm like, oh yeah, this is good. And I've actually, you know, in my role, you know, we've been trying this for a while, right? AI and doing this kind of thing. And it was around the time that, you know, ChatGPT-4 came out, that generation of large language models, where the thing went from, you know, a toy to suddenly it's really useful.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that, you know, I'm sure some doctors will never want to do this. They'll always want to run paper or type on the computer or whatever. And that's fine. I mean, at the end of the day, right, I want people to be efficient and to provide good care. And this is just one of the tools, you know, in their arsenal to do that. And the trust factor is also interesting because, again, the AI is not making judgments. So it's not like it's going to suggest something that's incorrect or something. But how much of the conversation should be in the note is actually an interesting question. You know, if I just played the transcript of a conversation that a doctor and a patient might have to, say, five different doctors, I'd get five different notes. I might get six different notes, you know. So how people want their notes to read can depend a lot. And so some of that also plays into how useful they find this technology. But even if it saves them, you know, a minute or two per patient, that adds up. Again, you're able to pay attention to the patient while they're in the room, so the patients enjoy that. But if I get home, you know, half an hour or an hour sooner because of this technology, most providers will say, yeah, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah, that contributes to the removal of burnout and a little bit better life balance. So I can certainly see that. So with this data that I understand now, it's not making decisions, it's capturing information. Is this used as far as a privacy issue? Is this used to train these large language models? Does this information go into the EHR, the electronic health record? And then is the EHR now starting to use this to train and do more AI? Where does it stop in terms of the data integrity and the privacy?
Great question. I think the answer to that is actually going to depend on the vendor who's making the technology. So certainly for us at NextGen, the information does absolutely flow seamlessly into the EHR, right? That's the whole point, is that there's not extra steps. You know, it's that it is making things more efficient, but it absolutely is not and does not get used to train the AI further. So the large language model is pre-trained. After the note is approved by the doctor and it's in the EHR, everything is deleted. The audio file, the transcript, you know, and so none of that is ever used ever again. And that is specifically to give confidence in the overall privacy and security of everything that's happening. Because at the end of the day, it's the note that is the medical record. And so that's the only thing that is kept. And that's what the doctors reviewed, written with the help of the AI, but then all of the artifacts of that are sent and erased and not used for further training. Because, you know, some of these AIs, you never know what about their training shows up in unusual places. And so we absolutely forbid that.
Right. I know there's a lot of cussing and discussing about who gets the notes. Can the patient now, you know, get their notes? Are they entitled to see these comments? And as a physician, you have to be very careful how you use the wording to describe the situation, because you want to be complete. You don't want to be offensive either. So there's a lot of concerns there. It sounds like you guys have got a really good, purposeful tool here that can make a big difference. You know, we talk about that particular area, informatics, you're really looking at, you know, productivity and patient engagement. What about some bigger issues? Are there other items that, like, for example, revenue cycle management, some of the billing and things like that? Do you start to look at those type of things as well with AI there at NextGen?
We absolutely do, you know. So the way that healthcare is paid for in this country is very convoluted, as I'm sure many of your listeners know. And so there's lots of opportunities to kind of make that more efficient on the back end. That's called revenue cycle management. I don't even know why that term is used specifically, but yeah. So we look for both ways to automate the many, many steps involved in, you know, checking somebody's insurance and creating the claim and then handling the claim and the response to the claim and the denial and, you know, all that, you know, stuff. So look for ways to automate that, as well as to actually use some, I would call it, you know, artificial intelligence to recognize, oh, this keeps getting denied, we need to do this. Or, you know, hey, you know, we've other practices are having success, you know, getting this to go through insurance this way, those kinds of opportunities. And there's other, you know, big opportunities for artificial intelligence, you know, in medicine. There's this concept of precision medicine, where based on your genome or your really specific situation, you know, this medication will work better for, you know, cancer treatment regimen was the best one based on your information. So that's very, very exciting. It's a population health earlier, right? The amount of data that is available to large healthcare systems and larger practices is really astounding. And again, it's private and secure, but they can make use of that data to know who is due for what care or what types of ways of trying to encourage people to get mammograms or to, you know, bring in their kids for well visits. Which ones of those are working? Which ones are not working? They can calculate what are called clinical quality measures. You know, how effective is the care for diabetes that you're providing in your offices? And is it easier or more effective to provide it in this way versus that way for this patient population or these people that live, you know, in this area? So there's all kinds of uses of that data, which is helping medicine, has for a number of years, but is just getting more and more effective in the dawn of kind of the ability to analyze that big data and then to actually even apply some artificial intelligence to it.
So let me shift the conversation just a little bit here, because it's amazing what you're doing with all of your providers, but let's take it home. You've got a very unique primary care practice in the beautiful countryside. Tell us about that and the relationship that you've established as a primary care doctor. I can only imagine, with the knowledge and technical skills, that what you run out of your primary practice is pretty incredible. Tell us more about the story there, if you would. That's interesting.
Sure. I mean, I think I'd maybe like to just think about it from the patient's perspective. And I'm hoping that they, if they're paying attention to that technology and they happen to notice it, then that's great. But it's not about the technology, right? It's about, you know, me being a primary care provider, my wife being a primary care provider, that they feel like they can trust, they feel like they can get a hold of if they need to, that is able to coordinate the care of whatever specialists are involved with them. And, you know, both of us have been in practice a long time. We've both got patients that have been with us for 20 years, and we're now seeing the kids of those patients or the kids of those kids. And so I like to think about it in terms of providing a trusted medical advisor for those patients. The technology is there to help assist with those things, but it's not like they're going to Star Trek and we're scanning them with scanners and diagnosing them that way. It still gets down to talking with people, establishing that rapport and that relationship and answering their questions, and then trying to nudge them towards maybe some better healthcare choices in terms of exercise and eating the right foods, going to the doctor, yeah, taking medicines, etc.
It sounds like a step back in time. I went to your website and I saw the barn, your remodeled barn out in the country, your waiting room. It seemed to me like, boy, this is like Leave It to Beaver. This goes back to, you know, 30 years back, where you knew the doctor is part of the community, and the trusted relationship was in place. But it's all kind of tempered with the fact that you can be in a remote rural area and have all the technology tools you need to perform at a very high level. Very impressive story in itself. That ought to be on Good Morning America, as far as I'm concerned, Bob. So last point here as we wrap up, okay, I can't escape this, because, you know, you've got a PhD in chemistry. You know, I mentioned earlier that You had Doc Edgerton there at MIT. He used to take pictures of bullets going through the apple. I'm familiar with that. But you were involved in septosecond spectroscopy, which is fast enough to study atomic and molecular structures. To give you an idea of how fast that is, 1 second is to 32 million years. I mean, this is really down at that level. And I'm just thinking of you, and I'm starting to think of quantum computing and the super, super technical knowledge that you have down at the molecular level and where this is all going in terms of technology. What do you think the future is going to be like? We'll end with that question.
It's a good question. I definitely think, you know, the future of science is continuing to discover new things to hopefully make people's lives better. I'm encouraged with the number of young people that want to become scientists and engineers and use our knowledge of the natural world to make our humans' lives better. And I think that medicine is still in a very exciting place as well. We have just astounding things that we can do to make people healthy, to fix them when they have traumas happen to them, to establish technology that allows them to have the kinds of long-term relationships with their primary care provider that we're able to offer in our area. So it's a very exciting world for me as a technologist and as a doctor and as the chief medical officer for NextGen Healthcare, a technology company for doctors' offices. So very, very excited by the future.
Would you agree with this that it's never going to be the same because of AI?
Maybe. I mean, it's never the same because of computers, and it's never the same because of the wheel. And so I think it's not necessarily better or worse because of AI, but I do think it's something that people need to be aware of, reasonably cautious of, without being foolish of some of the benefits that AI can offer. And I think people ask, is AI gonna take away people's jobs? And I'm not so sure about that. But the way I like it phrased, I didn't come up with this, but AI is probably not going to take people's jobs, but humans that know how to use AI or that really understand it, at least to some level, well, they might be taking the job of some humans that don't. So I do encourage people to be curious about it and to see, is there a way that this could help you do your job or do something else in your life that you enjoy or that you need to do?
Do you sense that the AI adoption rate is a lot faster than it was in, for the internet? That, you know, this is really an avalanche event where things are really pushing forward at a much faster rate?
That's a good question. It's hard to say because we are definitely in kind of the hype cycle of mm-hmm. AI, in my opinion. So there's a lot of exciting possibilities, but which ones of those shake out as really being useful long term, I think is still up in the air. But this concept of kind of a digital assistant, kind of the way that we're using ambient listening to help one specific profession, doctors, do their job of writing notes, that's the kind of win that I think we'll see in several different areas, many different areas from AI, as opposed to flooding everything with, you know, artificial intelligence and computing and that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Bob Murray, Chief Medical Officer of NextGen. We've really enjoyed this short time with you. We'd like to come back and revisit with you again. We'll certainly keep you on our radar screen. And thanks for all that you're doing to help promote a better healthcare environment.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you again. Thank you for having me. Take care.